Welcome to this episode of the Nearbound Podcast from the Vault, as we are gathering our thoughts and preparing for the fresh, brand new season in 2024 of this podcast. We wanted to resurface some of the best content, the best interviews that we have had on this show over the last 3 years. So I hope you enjoy this episode. As always, go to nearbound.com, subscribe for free to get the Nearbound Daily, to get access to all of the content around influencing buyers and customers through and with partners. I hope you enjoy the episode.
All right. We're rocking and rolling here. We got the newly minted Texas TK, and then Kevin, you joined him from somewhere else and is about to be a Texan. I don't know if that was supposed to be public though.
No, I don't. I'm nomadic at the moment. So
you're nomadic?
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
All right. Well, TK, so happy to have you. Thank you for joining Partner Up.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
Awesome. Today, though, we got the wonderful TK. And TK, we're going to be talking today about partnerships as an M&A vehicle, because you've been on the buy side and the sell side a couple different times. So let's go back to Tout. Like, that time you were on the sell side, and you were the CEO of this company, and there's been some amazing talent that came out of Tout. Like, I love, was it Dan that's at Winning by Design? Yeah. Oh gosh. Love his content. So good. So you kind of have a legacy that goes all the way back to Tout of some amazing people, but let's start there. You know, like, what kind of partnership did you have with Marketo that really, you know, let's unpack that a little bit.
Yeah, totally. So like, to set the context at a high level, Tout was partners with Marketo, and Marketo bought Tout. I was CEO of Tout. I was also leading up M&A strategy and alliances at Marketo, and we bought one of our partners. I was part of that deal. We bought Visible. And then I was also building out our partnership with Microsoft and Adobe, and then Adobe bought Marketo. So M&A partnerships go hand in hand in more ways than people realize. And in terms of Tout, you know, we were a sales engagement platform. We were one of the early ones before sales engagement was a thing. There is a lot of incredible talent that came out of that company that are all over now, which is really cool. And we essentially had two big partners, and because we knew that there were going to be two likely acquirers for the company unless we went big and went IPO. One big partnership was with Salesforce, because that's where most of our customers hung out, which was salespeople and using CRM. And the second big partnership was with marketing automation providers. And that was Marketo, Eloqua, and HubSpot. And through the course of the company with ToutApp, we got actually an acquisition offer from HubSpot early on, right before our Series A. Not a lot of people know about that. And then we later on got bought by Marketo. So partnerships were a big part of that.
So the Tout acquisition was like such an infamous MarTech acquisition. What was the partnership like with Marketo? And what do you think the metrics were that they were looking at that made them ultimately decide that this was an acquisition play for them?
75% of our customer base also use Marketo.
Yeah.
And that, like, literally that was a stat that we talked about in our partnership conversations, and also literally the M&A deck when we were talking to Marketo from a more strategic perspective. And the idea for, and that's, you know, when I ran alliances on the Marketo side, that's what we look for with partners that we work with. Also, it's like, okay, if 75% of a partner's customer base are our customer base, and they're much smaller than us, then we could take that and sell it to all our other customers. And like, can we do that? And if we can do that, then there's a lot of strategic upside, you know, in terms of dominating the space. And that's where it gets really interesting.
Was building these partnerships with Adobe and HubSpot and Marketo, was the primary objective to get acquired? Was it a secondary objective, or was that kind of not really on your roadmap at the time?
Yeah, look, when you're an early stage founder and you're going venture, and we were venture backed. We were backed by Andreessen Horowitz. We were backed by Jackson Square Ventures. You always are trying to go for as big of the pie as possible and swing as hard as possible. And so in that lens, the lens of partnerships are really about how do we get access to their customers? Because we know that their customers should be our customers, 100%. And like literally, if I could just get a list of all their customers, I know I could go pitch them and sell them. That was the idea behind targeting Salesforce, Marketo, a little bit of HubSpot. HubSpot wasn't quite in our core demographic or core ICP. And so for us, it was always, how do we get access to their customers and how do we get unfair access to their customers? And that was a primary driver. And then there was always a secondary driver of, you always want to kind of hedge your bets and have deep relationships with potential acquirers. And that's why, like, it was also a secondary thing of like, well, how do we continue the conversations with the top executives as well?
Whenever you were building out that early partnership at Tout, talk to me a little bit about how the engagement really worked from like the field perspective. Like, were you actively engaged in what we'll call typical partner motions, like, you know, co-selling, account mapping with Marketo at that time, where you were actively selling into their base, right, with them? Or was that more of something that happened after the fact?
Yeah. This is actually like, I don't know. So honestly, dealing with, as the Tout App CEO and the Tout App company, dealing with the Marketo partner organization was absolutely a nightmare. It was the worst. Their APIs weren't really great. They just wanted money for no good reason. And they like didn't have anything organized. And we were also smaller, so they weren't like sure if they wanted to give us the time of day. It was the worst. But what we knew was every single customer that we were pitching that was in the mid-market and the enterprise, like last minute on the deal, they'd be like, oh, by the way, we use Marketo also. Do you have a Marketo integration? So we needed an integration because we were losing deals because of it. And that was like one of the clearing points. So we hacked their Munchkin API and we found obscene ways of getting data into Marketo so that we could check the box on saying, yes, we integrate into Marketo and we're on launch point and you're fine. Like the data will flow and marketers will know what the salespeople are doing. And that got us to win a lot of deals. So I think for Tout App particularly, and I think this will be true depending on your audience, whether they're early stage or later stage. In the early stages, APIs as a form of business development and partnerships is super powerful. And we leveraged that like crazy with Salesforce, with Marketo, with Google. And that's what really getting in their marketplaces, checking the box on integrations, getting the data flowing one way or the other, whether we had to hack their APIs or do it through their formal APIs, we did it. And that got us a lot of traction and access in the customer base.
Did you build that integration primarily as a retention mechanism for your existing customers who are requesting it? Or were you actually like acquiring customers from, say, Marketo with that partnership? Or was it both?
Both. So anytime we did an API integration, we did one with LinkedIn, we did one with Google, we did one with Salesforce, we did one with Marketo, 3 to 4 things happened. Number one, we would start mentioning it in every deal and say, hey, by the way, we're integrated with the systems you're already using. Marketo, Salesforce, check, check, boom, boom. It's easy. Always made the deal flow process easier because they were like, oh, good. All our data is going to flow everywhere. Great. Number two, we got it out to our existing customers. And that's one more hook into their core systems. And that increased the moat and increased the retention. Number three, we always made a big announcement saying this, like we are integrating with this company. Sometimes the other company would be involved in the announcement and sometimes they wouldn't. We didn't care. We're like, we're announcing with this big company where all their customers should be our customers and would make a big deal out of it. And that allowed us to get a lot of air cover and use that to actually attract, create more leads as well. And then out of that, we would also then, that would give us fodder for advertising either into their customer base or marketplaces and saying, we now integrate with Marketo, we now integrate into Salesforce, and here's the key benefits that you get with this integration. So you, with that one single API partnership, even whether the other party's involved or not, you could do those four things, like increase the velocity of your deals, retain the customers with one more point, integration point, which increases your moat, make a big announcement, and also run advertisements on that platform's audience, which is super powerful.
Were your sellers actively engaged with Marketo sellers or AMs or CSMs or not?
For us, we never got into like a co-selling agreement or like a, it's because ours was interesting. So there was an interesting mechanism there. Our primary buyer for sales engagement was the sales ops person and the VP of sales. And what would always happen is all the way at the last minute on the deal, the marketing person, the demand gen person would get involved and say, hold on a second. Sales is buying an email platform and they're going to now send emails like, whoa, this is blasphemous. And, you know, sales would be like, yeah, we're going to do this because you're not giving us enough. And so in order to win the deal and get marketing sign up, we had to be able to say, don't worry, whatever emails that go out will also be updated in Salesforce and Marketo so that there's never going to be any crossfire. Everyone's going to know what's going on. And that allowed us to win the deals. And sometimes that would stop us from winning the deal. So that's the reason, that's the main reason we.
So I think I got a thread here that I want to pull. What's really interesting is that you had different buyers. Marketo had a marketing buyer, marketing ops really didn't really exist back then, kind of did, not really. It was more like demand gen, marketing leadership. You had a sales leader. I'm assuming what was strategic to Marketo at the time was like, we need to continue to grow. We need a olive branch into sales leadership, right? And I think a lot of people in partnerships, they're the tip of the TAM. I heard that phrase today. The tip of the TAM where it's like, they're trying to develop new markets or new personas or new verticals. So do you think Marketo was thinking like the Taobao acquisition, okay, we can sell through and make money, but we need something defensible against, you know, Salesforce and their threat, right? With Pardot, for example. Was that a big component of what made that relationship more strategic?
There's two things that drove the Taobao acquisition. One was Marketo had this Salesforce integration called MSI. And MSI was built on the Salesforce platform, and they needed to find a way to get off of that and have an independent product that's not on the Salesforce platform. So that was one. And Taobao was exactly that. It could replace MSI. It could do similar features. It was not built on the Salesforce platform. It was independent. And it was also an extension beyond just here's a lead. It helped you engage. And so that was half the reason they bought the company. The other half the reason, and this is like M&A takes on many forms. Like I've done M&A deals and I've been part of M&A deals, and you'd be shocked how many different reasons go into buying an M&A transaction to happen. Almost half is always like the revenue opportunity. The other half is really about something else. For Marketo and Taobao, the context here is Marketo had just gone private by Vista. And there was new leadership. The executive team completely moved on. And so literally like brand new CEO, brand new CFO who joined the same month that I did, brand new chief sales officer, brand new COO, and they needed to build out the bench of the executive team as fast as possible. And so the other half was essentially they needed more talent on the executive team. And so the other half was like, because the reason I know this is I was also like, hey, you want just Taobao, right? I'm going to go to the beach and like go take it easy. They're like, no. We're half of this. You got to sign on also, and you got to stay. And it's not just for Taobao. You also have to help with Marketo. And so that's why that's the other half of the deal.
So what started to happen after that? Like you've explained kind of the reasons why it was strategic to the market. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a second, I'm really taking on like a true like executive partner role. Like let's talk a little bit about that transition from CEO of Taobao. I'm sure you had product stuff that you had to transition into. Now I'm responsible for an ecosystem.
Phases. Normally when you sell a company, the founder kind of takes a month off. And so like, it's just.
Did
like,
you?
I did not. No. So I'll tell you what happened. It was just like the stage we were in. So I joined April of 2017. You know, Marketo had just gone private, brand new team. I just joined the executive team. We're hiring new execs. And within the first month, like I'm running the integration. That was my first thing. The second thing was overall corporate strategy, helping the CEO with that. That was my second thing. All of a sudden, I get a phone call and they're like, hey, can you just fly to Paris and do a keynote? I'm like, why are you saying? He's like, listen, Steve can't go. So you need to go. You're the proxy. So just get on front and you're going to do the keynote in front of all the French marketers. So I did that. And the day after that night, I took the team out to dinner and the team went crazy. I'm like, hey, there are all these crazy things that are going on. What are you guys doing? You're a new executive team member. I was their age. So they were like super honest with me. So I wrote out this 10-point email to Steve, the CEO. I'm like, hey, here's everything that's wrong in Europe. I think we got to like take a look at this. And I'm at a month in on the job and I'm trying to run the integration, trying to figure out strategy. A day later, I find out that they're like, hey, you need to go around Europe. And I'm like, oh, okay. It's like, is this a new job? They're like, no, in addition to everything else you're doing. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, can I think about it? Then this was the COO at the time. And he's like, yeah, you can think about it. And we're like, I went from San Francisco to Paris. I flew to Vancouver for an offsite. And this is where I'm having the conversation with the COO. And so we have our offsite. It's been a day. And he's like, hey, are you going to New York after this? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to New York. We had our QBR. So he's like, okay, good. Cause you definitely need to be there. I'm like, okay, great. Like, go to the New York. I've been on the road forever now. This is a month into the job. And, right as the QBR is about to start, the CEO gets in front. He's like, hey, by the way, I have a special announcement to make. TK here is going to be taking over Europe. And I didn't even sign on yet. And so we do the QBR and they talk to me and they're like, listen, you got to do this. We need you to do this. There's no one else that can do this right now because the exec team was just getting built out. And so I'm like, okay, cool. I guess I'll do it. And he's like, okay, where are you going after this? I'm like, I'm going home. I've been on the road forever. He's like, no, you have to come to Dublin with me and we got to announce your role. And so I had to go to Brooks Brothers and buy new clothes because I've been on the road for so long. And flew to Dublin, made the announcement, and then started running Europe. I did Europe for about a quarter, brought a new leader, came back. I had my one-on-one with Steve. And Steve's like, listen, you don't have to, but if you did, it'd be great. I'm like, okay, what? He's like, I need you to go to Australia and run the ANZ region now and do the same thing because our guy over there left and, you know, you got to go. Like, we need help. I'm like, okay. So I moved to Australia. I did that for another quarter, fix up the region. We hired someone new. We poached the leader of Eloqua to come into Marketo, which was an awesome win. And then I came back and I had another one-on-one and he's like, okay, here's what we need you to do next. And then he gave me alliances because alliances have been broken for a long time at Marketo. And then that after Europe, after Australia, then I took on alliances. And by the way, along with this, I was still running strategy and M&A at the same time. So it was like an interesting ride. And that's kind of how the whole thing came together right after that.
Alliances at Marketo was the combination of like tech partnerships and service partnerships.
That's right.
Okay. So it was both under that banner.
Yep.
Just want to make sure I understood. And then when did Bizible enter this picture?
Bizible was always a partner and it was the same story. Except like Aaron did get to take a month off, which I'm always jealous of. But it was the same thing. Like they were a great partner and a year had passed and we had more cash to deploy. It was like part of the playbook to do another acquisition. We looked at a couple of companies and Bizible was one of the popular ones again. Huge concentration of our customer base made a ton of sense. There was a little bit of like back and forth because technically Marketo did attribution, but Bizible did attribution better. And this is one of those classic, like a startup can just focus on one key problem. Not simple. It's actually a really tough problem to solve that Aaron and his team did. They did it 10 times better than what our team was able to do. And so we bought it and everyone was happy and that's how it came together. But they were a great partner as well.
Can you talk a little bit about the relationship in that role that you were in between strategy and alliances and like what the interplay there was between those two departments or groups?
They go hand in hand. Like I think that when it comes to alliances roles, you can like there's two ways to play the game. And one way is that you focus purely on a revenue perspective on like, how do we get influence revenue and source revenue going, right? And how do we make sure we have some form of an ecosystem, right? Like it's purely a revenue thing. And it's very much on a, what do we do this quarter, right? And how are we contributing? That's one plane you can do alliances in. The other plane you can do alliances in, and this is often why it's coupled with strategy, like you have a chief strategy officer that kind of owns this piece around M&A strategy and alliances, is you say, well, what is the future? And how do we capture more market share? And in order to go capture that market share and realize our vision, who are the two or three really strategic partnerships that we would do? Who are the two or three really focused M&A transactions that we would do, and who are the two or three really strategic service partnerships that we would do to go acquire more of the type of customers that would take this new vision that we're creating. And so you start to do a really great chess move on, okay, boom, 5 years from now, here's what we want. All right. And that, because of that, here are the service partnerships, here are the technology marquee partnerships, and here are the M&A deals that we're going to do. And here's how we're going to really move this giant ship that we're operating. And that kind of goes hand in hand with the CEO and the COO. And it's almost in a different plane than just the chief revenue officer, who's really focused on this quarter.
It's a really fun role because it forces you to look ahead into the future 5-10 years out and really look at trends. And this is a very similar role to the one I had at HubSpot. Were you looking at your launch point partners as from like the lens of M&A? Were there signals from that ecosystem that you would use to determine which partners or which categories of partners you wanted to focus on?
Yeah, we did. And LaunchPoint was a great source of data, also revenue. Like the LaunchPoint program, so there's a gentleman named Shai that reported to me that ran LaunchPoint. He did a tremendous job of taking LaunchPoint, which was kind of just a directory of partners, to like a true ecosystem where we actually had revenue share, we had co-selling. And that was one of the big priorities we had during our transformation. And once we did that, we were able to see which partners really rose up, did more sophisticated partnership deals with us beyond just APIs in terms of co-marketing, co-selling. And that also allowed us to really set the table on what are some of the strategic partnerships that we would do. Like during my time as part of alliances, we essentially had three priorities. And this was aligned with the goals of the company. The first priority was forging strategic partnerships with Microsoft and Google, because we couldn't with Salesforce. So the what was left was essentially Microsoft from a CRM perspective and a marketing perspective and Google. So we did that. And number two was forging strategic technology partnerships with what we believed were the next gen marketing tools. So that's why like Drip was a big one. We chased you guys down and we're like, we're getting married one way or another. Like, let's go do this. And then the third was, M&A in terms of, Visible. We did that. And in order to facilitate those, we made sure that we had an army of people that were constantly encouraging the ecosystem to build with us. We had the service partners that were aligned with our vision and thinking about not just deploying Marketo, but thinking about deploying Visible and any of the strategic partners that we did. So it all kind of tied together.
I have to ask this because I've had so many conversations recently with other SaaS companies about implementing a revenue share for their app ecosystem. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about what decision-making went into adding a revenue share component into the LaunchPoint ecosystem.
I mean, it's, first of all, a standard playbook, right? Like the natural evolution of a platform, if you will, is you first have open APIs because you don't really know what's possible. Then you start to understand the use cases. You pull in the use cases into being native, the ones that you're like, we should do this. This should be core to us. Once you do that, then you start to tighten up the APIs a little bit. And then you start to see what are the additional use cases that really rise up through your partners that is not going to be core, but is good additional use cases that you want to support in the ecosystem. So you kind of facilitate that. And then the third stage is you monetize that. Even though it's not core, you want to monetize the secondary use cases. So from a ruthless, we want to build a platform playbook point of view, this is exactly what Twitter did. This is exactly what Facebook did. This is exactly what, I wouldn't call LinkedIn, because LinkedIn is always like kind of shy. They always shy out from truly doing something. But the big platforms, that's essentially the playbook that they run. And Marketo essentially got to that point where we know what our core was. We knew what were the top partners that were secondary use cases that were still super important in the ecosystem. And we wanted to bubble them up. We wanted that to grow. We wanted to create more lock-in. And so we wanted to put our sales team and marketing efforts behind that. In order to do that, we wanted a rev share, and that's how it came together.
Whenever you were looking at, you know, kind of the ecosystem Invisible, and, you know, you were in this alliance kind of strategy leadership position, I think a lot of companies spray and pray their integrations today, like in 2020, like they go out and we need to integrate with everything, build 20, 30, 40, 50 integrations. And they lack a strategy in that it could develop into something bigger. What advice would you have for someone that's tasked with like, hey, you need to partner with the ecosystem? How do they go about understanding that there is something bigger here, that this integration is not just checking a box, but like can lead to something strategic, to be one of those three or four, focus partners? How would a partner leader kind of evaluate that framework?
Yeah. Like one of the things that I do now is I run a SaaS go-to-market coaching program. I work with early stage SaaS founders and we plan out their go-to-market machine, their growth strategy. And this goes hand in hand. Every great SaaS business essentially has three pillars. The first is market. The second is product. The third is go-to-market. And a lot of times, to your point, founders and early teams will build on product strategy, more features, more integrations, but it's not tied to market strategy and go-to-market strategy. And what I would tell you is if you're going to do 10 integrations or 20 integrations, and by the way, there's going to be a user that wants all 20. But what I would ask you is, what's your ideal customer profile? What is your market strategy? And what are the platforms that already own those customers in your ideal customer profile? Prioritize those, integrate with those, go deep with those, get into their marketplaces, figure out a way to co-sell into them if they'll give you the light of day. They may not in the early days, but they will later. And that is how you prioritize both your product strategy and your market strategy, and then mobilize in your go-to-market.
Definitely, definitely. Let's go back to your story. So you're owning the alliances ecosystem. Then you've cemented, deeper partnerships with Microsoft, with Adobe, with Google. Whose door did you start knocking on at Adobe? Because, Vista, I'm sure you could tell us tons of stories about Vista. They run a machine. They run a machine to help create that kind of value in a short period of time. But whose doors did you start knocking on at Adobe and why?
Yeah. So, I think there's always multiple threads to this. Like, when you are private equity owned, you have the executive team, and then you have operating partners from the Vista side, and then you have the Vista owners. And even as an executive team, you get certain visibility into what's going on top, right? Like, and it's limited sometimes. But, and so here's what I know. We never did anything with Adobe, ever. Adobe was not on our radar. However, when we were forging a deeper partnership with Microsoft, literally we were in the Microsoft like partnership team. We were meeting with them and we're like, all right, like we want your salespeople, your marketing efforts to also promote Marketo, and we will integrate deeper into Azure and Dynamics CRM. And this is a great differentiated strategy so that we're not just dependent on Salesforce, because the other truth is for Marketo, a majority of the customer base is on Salesforce CRM because they're number one. So we're like, we need a differentiated strategy. We need to hedge our bets here. So we're like literally in this meeting, we're meeting with them. And we knew that Microsoft had a very, very big partnership for marketing with Adobe. And ultimately in the deal points, they're all, and what was on play was, hey, if we do this deal and Microsoft really promotes Mike Marketo, which would be huge for us, and they're all their sales team and everything, then you got to, put by Azure. That's the kind of the give and take. And we're like, yeah, we'll do it, but we'll only do it if every time you mention Adobe, you also mention Marketo, because Adobe is B2C and we're B2B and it's complementary and you should mention both of us. And I was the lead on that negotiation, and they were like, we don't know if we can do that. I'm like, listen, the only way I'm authorized to do anything is if you mention us every time you mention Adobe. And it got to a point where the meeting got so tense, they asked us to leave the room and so they could talk internally and like literally like call up this RCO Steve, and I'm like, we just got kicked out of the room. And he's like, that's probably a good thing. And so that was our position dealing with Microsoft, because Adobe was always more B2C than B2B. And so we had nothing to do with them, but Microsoft was the key. And so that conversation right after that, like I came back, I'm like, listen, we can't do a deal because they will not mention us. I think they have limitations in terms of Adobe and what they can do. So I don't know if this is worth it. And that's when it went up one more level because they literally couldn't get to a deal with us and Microsoft wanted to get to a deal with us. And somehow, and this is where the lines blur a little bit between what the exec team does and the operating team does and the owners do. Then we got into a conversation with Adobe. And I can't talk anything beyond that because obviously there's like super NDAs in place and everything. But that's how it came up, at least from a partnership point of view.
Yeah. I mean, I think the narrative is well known in the market outside the specifics that, you know, Adobe was really short up their B2B business, Magento, Marketo, right? And has built an amazing B2B arm in a very short period of time using companies that already exist. And now there's great leadership kind of overseeing both of them. In that time, I don't think too many people get the opportunity to see, you know, acquired and then acquired again. You didn't stay at Adobe for too long, but talk about that. Like you were, you know, in a partnerships position and you just got swallowed by a Fortune 500 company. What was that like being like, okay, what is partnerships like at Adobe?
Yeah. Incredible organization. You know, one of the things you do after you get acquired is you pull in your direct reports, you talk through the acquisition, what this means for them, because it's always a scary time. It's an exciting time, but also a scary time because they're like, what happens to me? What happens to my job? And, you know, I have no experience building alliance organizations. This is the first shot I got at it. And, you know, I was lucky enough. They took a chance on me and I did it and we crushed it. And, but I had really great lieutenants that were alliance leaders. And so we were able to kind of work together to create a strategy to win. And one of the interesting things for all the leaders, when I pull them together, they're like, we're super excited. I'm like, okay, tell me why. Like, and they're like, honestly, the Adobe Alliances organization is world-class. They are one of the best of the best of the best when it comes to running alliance organizations, partnership organizations. It is, and I didn't quite understand until I went in and met some of the people and, you know, worked through the integrations and everything. And I'm like, these guys are solid. They're professionals. They understand what true partnership is and the span and breadth at which they create partnerships across Creative Cloud and Experience Cloud, and Document Cloud is amazing. And so on one hand, it was super amazing. And, so I was senior vice president at Marketo, and given my, you know, after an acquisition, everything, you renegotiate everything. And so they gave me an offer to stay, incredible offer. And they also, and then like Steve kind of pulled me aside and a couple others, and they were like, hey, you should interview for this other position. And this other position was part of the strategy organization at Adobe, rolling in, like, which supports the executive team at Adobe. And so I got to meet a lot of the exec team members at Adobe to interview for that position. And I didn't get that position. I knew I wouldn't, but it was still worth it to give it a shot. And they invited me.
What? Why? Because they needed to pull in some Bain, McKinsey, Accenture consultant for that, or what?
That, and I don't think Adobe is ready for I was 36 at the time, a 36-year-old VP. And I literally told her,
I'm like, listen. The title at Adobe is like, it's intense. That bar is very high.
Most they only have like 100 VPs in the entire company. That's right.
How many employees?
I want to say 15,000, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, there. It's insane.
It's
an extremely high bar. The CEO of Informatica, Anil, just came over to Adobe as a, you know, VP, which is crazy.
No, VP is a big deal. It is huge. And senior director is also a big, big deal. And that's what, like, they gave me. They were like, you're going to be senior director. It is big, big. It's all huge. I remember I was talking to a recruiter and I'm like, listen, you're not going to give me this job. I don't even want to interview for it. And they're like, how do you know that? And I was like, honestly, I don't think you're ready for a 30 something VP. Like, I think you're going to hire someone that's like very proven and maybe has spent 10 years at Adobe and, or is coming from another company that is like Google. And like, that is what I would hire. And she was like, I don't think that's true. You should interview. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll interview. And I did, because you get to meet the exec team at Adobe. Like, it's insane. So I got to meet with a lot of people, except for the CEO. I didn't get to meet with him, but that's okay. I had to do the homework and everything. And I kind of went through that experience. And then I looked at, you know, I started off as a solo founder, at Tout App, and building that company. I was CEO. I grew that to 7 million ARR. And then Marketo bought us and I became SVP of strategy, ran different regions and alliances. And then I was now, you know, like a, like our role that they were trying to fit me into and Adobe, and there were different options. And it basically 10 years had passed in that journey. And there was a little bit of like, you know, I think I should just stop for a second before I jump into another thing. Like, and so that was a natural, like I integrated my team, made sure everyone was good. Everyone like kind of got great roles. And then I decided to take some time off, and that was last year.
So from the perspective of strategy and alliances, how did you kind of help Adobe craft that like B2B narrative?
Yeah. So that was interesting. For an organization that didn't really have a B2B arm, they had a lot of opinions on what a B2B arm should be. And I think what was interesting in that I only spent 3 months there. And so most of my time was like, hey, here's what I would do. I'm leaving, but you know, best of luck. Here's how, what I would do. And so I think they already had preconceived notions on what that was going to be. And I think they were kind of just like, and you know, like none of the executive team is there right now at Adobe, the Marketo executive team. Everyone's moved on. And so I think the general, and this is not a bad thing, this is just a thing. They had a pretty clear plan and they were like, thank you very much. We'll take the asset. We'll take it from here. And that's kind of how it generally went. And so didn't have much influence beyond some strategy briefs that I sent over that they appreciated. And that was it.
Let's try to go into some tips here. So on the sell side, if you're building partnerships, what are TK Cotter's, what's your top five tips of like, hey, if you're on the sell side and you're building a partnership, here's what you need to get right.
Yeah. I think firstly, understand what is your number one system of record. Like if we're talking strictly SaaS businesses, which is what I specialize in, find out whoever you're serving, who's the system of record. There's usually one or two. That's it. Focus on those first and really make sure you have a really smooth integration. Number two, a really compelling story on why you add more value, why they can't just get it done natively in the core platform. Once you have those two nailed, figure out who their customers are and learn how to sell to them directly. As you build momentum, then approach for deeper partnerships. Don't do it the other way around. So what most people will do is they'll try to integrate with 20 platforms. They'll spread it real thin. They'll have a loose story. It won't be an A-plus integration. And then they'll go to each of those and say, hey, do you want a partner? Like, and biz dev people are the worst. I hate biz dev because they, like, honestly, like the craft has poor people because most of us don't really get a deal done. Like most biz dev people don't know how to get a deal done. And so you approach them, you have enough things and you say like, oh, I met with so-and-so and nothing happens. If you really want to get the attention, focus on the one system of record, maybe the one system of engagement, and really, really build an A-plus integration. Really hone out why you add more value. Go get their big customers. Go get them like directly. Go approach them. Say, here's how we add value. We know you use this. Here's how we add value. This is why you need this. And then go approach the partnership organization like, hey, and say, hey, you know what surprised us? A whole bunch of our top customers also use you. Here's the logos. What do you think about doing something together? And at that point, the other partnership side, even at the larger company, they'll be salivating because they'll be like, oh, like we can plug this in and make more money. And then don't be shy about giving rev share. Who cares? Like your cost of acquiring a customer when you go approach them directly is going to be $1,000 if you are, you know, if you're a true B2B SaaS company that's serving the upper mid-market and enterprise. Now, if you get a warm intro, if you get access to cold marketing, if you can use their brand, that's easily going to be less than $1,000. Everything's going to move a lot faster. So giving them a rev share is actually good business. And so that's how I would approach it.
I love that. It's, we talked about that in our first episode, Kevin, right? Like finding your first sumo, like, because I agree with that philosophy 100%. Like most BD people, you know, they're trying to figure out, do I do all the things or do I do one thing well? And I think it's, you know, the simplify, focus, and repeat. What about on the sell side? Let's say, what are your tips and tricks for the other side? Like on the, on the buy side, what are your tips and tricks on the buy side?
I think that, this one would vary a lot depending on what stage you're at, right? But, do you have a sense of like what you're for your audience, what stage they're at generally on the buy side, or is that?
It's both. Like we have folks that are listening that are in, you know, the Fortune 500 in partnerships and also early stage, you know, partnership leaders, right? Like a head of partnerships, but it's a team of one.
On the buy side, one of the first things that I did was I hired a really strong data guy because we just didn't have enough data. We didn't understand what were truly sourced deals, what were influenced deals. We didn't understand which of our partners were consuming our APIs the most. We didn't understand any of that. And what you really want to start to understand first is from the service partner side, who are the ones that are really bringing more deals under the table, like truly. And you will always see an 80-20 distribution on those. There's always going to be partners. I had so many Marketo partners. I came out like, do you know who I am? I've been with Marketo for like 10 years. And I would look at my little thing and I'm like, that's cool. But in the last 2 years, you've given us no business. So I don't know what, I know you want to be like number one, but go talk to those three guys. They have brought me the most business. We're going to empower them. So that's like, get the data straight. Once you start to understand which of your technology partners are consuming your APIs, like the number of API calls that are happening the most, then you start to understand what your customers want. And so go prioritize those deals. And so I think the first thing would be like data, like get your data straight. Everyone says they're data driven. Marketers are the biggest ones that are guilty of this and they're not. And biz dev alliance organizations are even less so data driven. So I would get the data straight and really look at where's the money coming from and where's the API calls coming from? Because those two will give you a lot.
And did you monetize API calls? I recall Marketo charging for that as well as part of, you know, your overall contract value.
I think if you did, I forget, we changed up pricing and packaging. I think obviously you got a certain number of API calls included up to a certain point. And then beyond that, you had to pay more. That's generally what the principle was.
Right. So like if a partner is really blowing out API calls because they're aggregating a bunch of stuff, like you could potentially make the case for like better net dollar retention because that partner is involved.
Yep. Exactly. So data is number one. Number two thing I would say is, at least from my experience, was we got really smart about co-marketing. And I think a lot of companies don't, within an alliances org, they don't do co-marketing well. And the reason for that is it's a bunch of biz dev people trying to do marketing. So I hired a marketer and I armed him and I aligned him. And this is one of the perks of, you know, also being SVP of strategy. I was also able to like get priority on our core marketing team to support partners. And we paired them up and we said, go generate pipeline. Like you are responsible. You have a pipeline number that you're responsible for, but what you have an advantage on is you have 3 to 5 of these top revenue generating partners and you have 3 to 5 of these top technology partners. Use them, run a marketing campaign. And that is why when I ran alliances, we had our largest in company history in terms of source revenue and influence revenue ever. Largest in terms of technology platform revenue, but that's only because Shai got that going that year that we didn't have it before. But we were able to do that because we got marketing down solid. Like we built out a marketing team inside the alliances organization. It was like amazing. So that would be my second thing, because I think biz dev tends to be kind of a sales type of approach, which is one-to-one. But if you can switch to one-to-many and really get leverage, that can be very powerful.
How would you engage with your sales team during this time? Because if I recall, there was also like a co-selling aspect to the way you did partnerships, right?
Yeah, we built out, this is standard playbook, but I think what we did differently was we built out an army of partner managers, entry-level people. They're fresh, they're young, they've never done sales before, they've never done analysis before, but their sole job was to ensure that partners and our salespeople were talking on deals that they should be talking on. And they were the champion for partners on every deal. And that partner manager, and I know partner manager roles exist in like every company and every alliance organization is fairly standard, but what I opted for, I was like, I need bodies that can have coverage on all the deals. And so I, instead of hiring really experienced partner managers, which they have a certain need, and I had a couple of those, but I elevated them, I hired an army of entry-level people, and they just flooded like all deals to make sure that partners were involved when they could really, because what we knew, and again, so this connects back to principle number one, I knew from the data, our win rate was 25% higher when partners were involved. I knew that our deal sizes were bigger when partners were involved. So I use that data on every executive keynote in part of the company to say, when you involve a partner, here's what happens to your deals. Talk to your nearest partner manager. I flooded the streets with partner managers so salespeople could get help. Between those two, we rocked it.
Amazing. What a story. All in what? 3 years? Less than 3 years.
2 years.
Yeah, 2 years. 2 years. That's as close, folks, as you're going to get to an MBA and PhD in business development and partnerships right there. Like TK is going to be bringing us the masterclass course on all that coming soon. I think that's a perfect spot to end. TK, Kevin, parting thoughts?
Keep closing deals. That's all that matters.
That is what matters. It's not all about martini glasses and golf courses, especially during quarantine. That's not BD in 2020.
You got to
close deals. Love it. Awesome. TK, thanks so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. This was a blast.
We're going to have you back on.